Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. As you know, I try to keep an eye on the legislature when they're in session and report any bills that I see that may have an effect on us in Sussex County. Just wanted to lift out about three or four bills, some we've mentioned earlier. House Bill 272 is the EMS bill that I spoke with you about last week, and our EMS department supports that legislation. The one thing that I forgot to get from you was whether or not you support it, so I can adequately represent your interests in the legislature about House Bill 272. This is the bill that allows doctors, physicians, and our EMS experts in the field to communicate back and forth without liability in case they can't get approval for the service or the treatment prior to performing their service.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
And we have an attorney, or a number of them here, that work for us. I was wondering, what are the consequences of this, or what would they or could they be? Where do we stand that, you know, regarding that? Say, you know, say we're sued, and what are the consequences of that law?
Mr. Moore, the question is, without this law that's being proposed, what are the consequences for our paramedics while they're on the job? With the law in place.
Yes, and in other words, just going ahead and serving without the authority we used to have to get. Are we vulnerable? What kind of vulnerability do we have?
I think there would be a certain governmental immunity anyway.
Okay.
What they're trying to do by this is it's kind of a stopgap, and I think Mr. Godwin before had indicated that it was really to help with the doctors that they were communicating with en route.
Okay. Yeah. So I just was wondering what the other side of that might be.
But our paramedic department tells me that they have an implied immunity.
Correct.
when they're working on the job on the scene. But this is to protect the physician in the hospital, okay, who they're talking with, and the communication itself against any possible liability, because many times the patient is not conscious, and they need to perform services without his approval.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it was about.
So the word clarifies is, I think, the key there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Strengthens it.
So I just want to make sure I have your
I would say so. I hear no negatives. Yes, sir. You
okay.
Do.
You got my support, but has there been a problem in this?
I don't know where the bill came from, Mr. Wilson, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's been a problem. I really don't know.
But they copied off from Pennsylvania and West Virginia where it said it come from.
I could do a little research with the sponsor to find out where the bill was originated or how it was originated.
Yeah, I don't have it down here who sponsored it.
Okay.
But I just wondered if it had a problem. That's what ordinarily you usually got a problem when you try to correct it.
If correct.
It's never a problem. You just go on late.
I'll ask. Senate Bill 157 is the FOIA bill. This bill has it's passed the Senate. It's currently in the House Administration Committee. And this bill will allow you to meet in executive session to now discuss sales of property and leases, whereas before, the only clarification, I believe, was land acquisition. Isn't that correct, Mr. Moore?
That is correct.
So it would not be just about you buying property, land acquisition. It could also be about us selling a piece of property or leasing property in or out. So that bill is moving. It's passed the Senate, and it's in the House Administration Committee, so it appears to have some traction.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we are okay.
Yes, sir,
with that.
We're okay.
Mm-hmm. The next bill I'd like to bring up to you, this is really a new bill, Senate Bill 191. For those of you who attended the SCAT dinner last Wednesday evening in Bridgeville, the governor spoke about this legislation, and it was introduced the very next day. This bill is designed to develop downtown development districts, and the governor is trying to set aside a certain fund that will be used to help growth. And in this regard, there would be an application process for the towns, and they would apply for the money. And some of the qualifications would be that the new investor coming to town, would be spending some dollars to develop something, a new store, a new mall, a new subdivision, some kind of growth. And they could apply for up to 20% from this state fund of their hard costs. Now, all the details of how this works, I just spoke with Connie Holland at 10 of 10 this morning, and it'll be her office, the Office of State Planning, that will set up, will promulgate all the rules as to how to apply for this money. They haven't got that done yet. But she assured me that as soon as that is developed, she'll make sure we know what those rules are. There'll be an application process to have access to this money. There will also be a development district assigned to each county. There'll be one for each county. And this would be, obviously, not for a municipality. It would be for an unincorporated area. In this county, it could be an unincorporated area that's already considered to be its own neighborhood, such as Harbison or Lincoln, one of those town centers or town areas that are not incorporated. Those areas would also qualify for this fund.
But just general areas wouldn't?
It will have to have certain density. In other words, it will have to have a certain number of homes and businesses before it can apply.
There's some reference in there, I think, to villages or something like that, I believe.
Correct. But all the details haven't been worked out yet.
Okay. All right.
The wording of the bill said cities, and I didn't. You're also talking about little towns and municipalities.
Yeah,
so
the bill, they have the final draft that was introduced. You're right. The first draft did not include counties.
Right.
The draft that was introduced does have counties in it so that each county can get money out of this fund as well for one placement.
So a town like Bethany could?
No.
No.
That's an incorporated city.
It's unincorporated area.
Oh, it's unincorporated. Only unincorporated.
A county area.
Okay,
that's why I mentioned Harbison and Lincoln.
Yes.
Those are two that we all know about that are town center types.
Okay.
But they're not an incorporated city.
Well, that sure clarifies it. Thank you.
Okay.
I mean, I have concerns. It's, once again, it's the state interfering with a free market. It's going to create unfair competition. It's going to disrupt the free market enterprises that are competing in those areas. All of a sudden, you've got the governor swooping in and giving a grant to the value of 20% to a new operation, whereas you have these other downtown businesses that have been struggling along, trying to cut costs to stay alive. And I worry because this is coming from the state planning office as opposed to the economic development office. It seems like this certainly should be in the economic development office. It may be that the governor couldn't put it there because they already have a downtown program. Again, it just seems like they're duplicating their efforts and they're doing it in a way that completely disrupts your traditional free market system that we believe in or we used to believe in this country.
Here, let me.
But, you know, it's money coming down from above. I guess nobody's going to get in the way until their taxes are raised again.
Mr. Cole.
You can go to Sam. He's my elder.
thank you, Mr. Cole.
You're welcome, Sam.
It sounds almost like the deal that came out about 20, 30 years ago. They came around and gave money away to poultry plants to buy chicken houses to help loan money to the new farmer that was coming on the block. And the poultry plants came along and gave those more money because of the new house. And I left the older farmer that had 5-10-year-old houses was getting lesser money. So I got involved in that a little bit, and I said, is this being fair to the older grower? Where's the competition at? Why are we taking money from the older grower and getting it to the newer grower and expect us to keep up? It's the same program here. As Mr. Phillips has pointed out, it's exactly the same program. At first, the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it's not. And furthermore, what caught my ear here is, you said they're going to put their money into it. And I went to a meeting last Wednesday, and I heard all these cries about no money. They're going to raise the taxes. LLC tax was raised this week, or last week, I should say, but now. Anyway, recently. And it was raised about $100 million. What did they do? They took the money from the business people that's trying to make a go here in the state. In fact, they're discouraging those that are coming to the state. And why incorporate in this state? You can go almost any other state now. One time, this was the apple of the eye. Most people came to this state to incorporate. But now, go somewhere else. You can go almost anywhere to get. So it's not an apple here no more. So this, when the government gets involved, think they're going to take somebody's money from somebody and give it to somebody else. It's not good. That's the way I look at it.
How much money are we talking
about? One-fifth of money.
20%. Yeah, the fund that I believe the governor wants to establish is $4 million.
Mm-hmm. For the whole state, right?
Totally.
Not per county.
No, I think for the whole state. It was a relatively small number. I could look that up. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I don't have that for you right off the top of my head. But it was a real, I thought it was, because I heard him last Wednesday night like Sam did, and I thought it was a relatively small fund. But it would be, again, it's only going to be 20% of their hard costs, which would be their infrastructure costs and those kinds of things. So maybe there's some calculation, some wisdom applied to this that gave them the number. But it was a small figure, as I remember.
Yeah.
$7 million? Okay.
$7 million.
Oh, we had something.
I'll defer to Mrs. Ladies first.
Because I have
now.
It's Ladies Day.
Got to take care of the old and the ladies.
Thank you. I do have two of those areas in my district, and I'm wondering how does he define improvements? What is he talking about? What is the bill talking about? And what are you talking about?
The details have not yet been released. The bill was just introduced a few days ago, and the governor has assigned the details to the Office of State Planning. That's why I talked with Connie Holland this morning before our meeting, and she really doesn't have the details developed yet. So basically, the bill has been introduced, but all the details of how it will work really haven't been revealed yet.
Well, I would love to see improvements to my little communities, but I don't see we don't have enough details about this.
I have not attempted to take a position on this because I think we need more details.
Right.
I just wanted you to be aware of the bill and that it's out there and that it's Senate Bill 191. And again, it was originally intended to help towns and cities, but they added the counties in to make sure that we weren't left out.
Real quick.
Mr. Cole.
Real quick, I'll just take a different tack. You take a town like Harbison, which has been fairly stagnant in its commercial development and things of that nature. If this possibly could bring a little more activity to an area like that, because activity breeds other activity, and so it might help. It might be helpful. It's a very small amount. It basically sounds to me makes them feel good in Dover that they're trying to do something, and it may be too little, but these unincorporated areas, little villages and what are crossroads and different things, could have a few businesses established there, and they've been like that for years. Maybe this would bring a new business or two businesses into an area, and it might help. So, for $7 million, it's worth maybe the risk. So I would probably would support it.
$7 million, yes.
You will keep us abreast of this.
I certainly will.
Yeah,
I would expect the State Planning Office to have something soon because I'm sure they're being pressured to bring this forward to help propel this bill.
But I wouldn't want the county to be left out of it. If I don't want to get them the sense that there's this $7 million, and
I'm told
we ought to have a piece of it, I think.
They don't have the money, George. I mean, they've been talking
If nothing happens.
2 months.
No,
and they don't have the money. And so they're going to raise your taxes so that they can slush $7 million around to probably the politically connected, if you ask me.
Anyway, I guess we'll watch the bill as it develops. Yes, sir.
Continue on, please.
I also want to bring your attention to House Bill 289. This is a relatively new piece of legislation, and I will not read the entire synopsis to you. I'll read the one-line synopsis because it's pretty easy to understand. Since this bill creates equity among users of telecommunication services by extending the 911 fee to prepaid wireless retail transactions, which means that if you go to Walmart to buy a prepaid telephone, Walmart is going to collect from you a fee that will be forwarded on to the state's 911 fund to provide 911 services. So I'm told that currently there isn't a fee that we receive anyway from cell phone communications. I'm not sure whether the state does or not, but currently the 911 fees all come in from hardwired telephones to your home. And I'm also told that there's a minimum floor in Sussex County, for Sussex County, where the state will always make sure we get those fees from 2,000 phones, and that we currently have less than 2,000 hardwired phones, but the state is still paying that minimum fee. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So this will help enhance their fund by collecting a 911 fee from the package phones that are sold in department stores. And that is the crux of House Bill 289.
Couldn't there be an easier way to, other than asking businesses to do this? I mean, isn't there some other way?
Well, businesses collect taxes. I mean, I was in business for years, and as a business person, we collect taxes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Businesses collect taxes of various sorts for various reasons. There's motor fuel tax that all the service stations charge and pass on to the state and the federal government.
I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah,
and in my business,
there are all sorts
we
of
had
taxes.
An ugly tax
there are
called
environmental
the slip
taxes.
Tax. Yes, and there's it was a, very difficult right. for us as a business, as a small business.
I don't know what she
so,
said.
I'm, grocery just, I'm talking about why put the onus on a business to collect. Is there some other way that we could collect this fee other than asking businesses to be the collection agent? I'm just wondering.
But we
you
don't
know.
Collect it.
Apparently there is not. Other mm-hmm. states are to do it this way. Mm-hmm. The business collects it because if you, the only way you do it, the business collects it or the person that goes to buy the phone is going to send you the money. Mm-hmm. And that's never going to work.
No. Okay.
But the
all
problem right. is in the system, you pay a tax on your cell phone mm-hmm. if you have a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
You go to buy you buy these prepaid phones at mm-hmm. Walmart or somewhere else. There is no tax collected, so they are not paying to use the system.
Correct.
And today, about 75% of all the 911 calls are on cell phones, so that's an issue. It keeps costing more money to provide the service, and this is one way of trying to help.
Oh, yeah.
Get some
yeah.
of that.
I agree with the premise.
Mr.
I just
President, if you're with AT&T or someone like that, you will pay tax on your cell phone.
Right. You're already paying it today.
I guarantee you I'm
yes,
paying
sir.
Cell phone.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Paying a dollar and a half, I believe, per
yes,
phone.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But those who but go out and buy these prepaid phones are paying nothing in the system.
That's mm-hmm. the only ones.
That's there's correct. A substantial number of
that's
them.
That's who this
well,
bill
it might be, but I'm saying it's not AT or
no.
Verizon or none of those.
No. You're already paying that if you have them with a the carrier. That's correct.
I agree with the premise. Absolutely.
Totally.
And it helps subsidize 911, right? It doesn't really pay for it.
No.
It just helps subsidize some of the costs. Okay.
The reason I spoke up, Ms. Deaver, is maybe I misunderstood. I thought you said you had an ugly tax.
As a business person?
But I thought I heard.
As a business person, I sure did.
Is that what it was called?
No, that's what I called it.
Okay.
In my county, we had to collect 10% of every dollar paid to us for
ugly people?
For boat slips.
Oh, boat slips.
And it was very, very, I'm sorry, it was very, it was supposed to be a temporary tax. And, of course, as it goes quite often, it still exists, and that was 30 years ago.
I mean, we have hidden taxes. Mrs.
I understand that.
Already there.
But Mrs. Deaver, it can be put on record. I totally agree with you. Any taxes are ugly. And people that's in business, it's just oodles and oodles of work. My wife said she's loaded down trying to do housework and spends half the time trying to take care of the paperwork.
Yes.
And that's just the farm. Now, what do you think? You get into a business, you just end up hiring mm-hmm. bookkeepers, trying to pay them and also trying to make a living and try to keep above board.
I'm very familiar with that.
I mean, they don't, I think sometimes people forget that.
Mm-hmm. I'm very familiar
especially
with
those
that.
Who've never been in business, never.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Lawson? Next. Mr. Lawson. Mr. Godwin, next.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I have a question for him. That's off the record question.
You do kind of look alike.
Not really. He's a lot better looking than I am. Better looking.
Mr. Lawson, a little short of hair.
Okay, I'd like to bring you back to the issue of the Wetlands Advisory Committee. We discussed this in length last week, and I won't drag you through another presentation like that.
Thank you.
But I do need to get your direction because I will attend a meeting tomorrow in Dover of the Wetlands Advisory Committee, and we have the assignment of bringing your answer for five questions. And there will be discussion, I believe, tomorrow about the context of the CARET subcommittee, which I included in your package, their minutes from their last meeting, which I thought were relatively interesting and kind of diverse in opinion. But in any event, that discussion will, I think, center around the tax incentives presentation that you saw last Tuesday by Brenna Goggin. And also, we're going to talk about the density clustering. But I don't think that's going to be considered as something to move forward with. And also, we're going to talk about the forest preservation program, about revitalizing and refunding that. So if we could, I'd like to start off with, if it's okay with you,
sure.
start off by answering the five questions that I need to answer tomorrow for you. I can read them to you if you don't have them in front of you.
We'll do question number one. What?
You want to do that?
Oh, no.
I have no idea.
Sure, read number one to us.
I mean, Mr. Ross is making a presentation today on this issue. Is
wait.
It something that we should
can,
maybe
I
listen to
I can wait
that
until
first?
You take those comments before we go to certainly.
Okay.
That might have an
okay.
effect on your vote.
This
yes,
is,
sir.
This is still a, where's ever, we're not getting deviating there because we have a gentleman in the room that might question if we're doing something not proper.
Agenda.
That was still on the Wetlands Advisory
yes.
Committee.
Yeah.
Yes. And this person that's going to speak is a member of that committee as well as I am.
Okay, Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Okay, sure. And I know last week we saw a lot of stuff on wetlands.
I think we did.
I would ask just if you could not rush through it, but I mean just, you know.
It's going to take about 20 minutes, I think, Mr. President.
That's fine.
My name is Martin Ross, and I am a member of the Delaware Wetlands Advisory Committee representing the Delaware Farm Bureau. The reason we're here and having this discussion is DENREC is requesting to assume Section 404 regulatory authority, or is asking for that authority. I thought it would be important to have a little bit of background and understand where we came from and how we got here, because very few people know. The Rivers and Harbors Act was also known as the Refuge Act, was passed in 1899. You wouldn't think it would be a burning issue with an act that old. That basically gave the authority of regulating navigable waters to the Corps of Engineers. The Water Pollution Control Act was passed on June 30th of 1948. It's also known as the Clean Water Act. In 1972, the navigational authority of the Corps was merged in with Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. Please note that the secretary mentioned here in this slide is the Secretary of the Army, and that the mandate of the Refuse Act and the Section 404 remained the same. It didn't change. It was to permit the discharge of dredge and fill material into navigable waters at specified disposal sites, not to prohibit, to permit. The second paragraph of Section 404 literally remained the same as well. It established criteria, guidelines for rulemaking. Only in 1899 could you have the first paragraph telling a federal and executive branch of government, here's what we want you to do, and one paragraph, the second paragraph, telling them how you want to do it. If you did that today, there'd probably be 2,000 pages. This looks very complicated, territorial seas and then contiguous zone, but I'm going to simplify it for you. This is a graph, NOAA graph, that is current. This is the current criteria used for navigable waterways. Note the territorial seas, which would be equivalent to, say, the Nanticoke River. The channel in the Nanticoke River that goes into Maryland and back into Delaware, that's a navigational commerce, and that would be equivalent to that. The state-owned or privately owned land is the state submerged lands, the adjacent lands, adjacent wetlands. These have a number of names. You could call them subaqueous lands. You can call them a wetland. You could call them adjacent submerged lands, whichever. And those are there. Now, the reason for the original act in 1899 was because navigational commerce then and today is very important. And you can imagine if fill was allowed in that area there, it wouldn't take very long before the navigational channel would become impassable. So really, the permitting was to understand that you would need some dredge and fill of the state submerged lands or the adjacent wetlands for things like the Woodland Ferry. So the Woodland Ferry is intrastate waterways, where the barges that go between the state lines are interstate waterways. And for the Woodland Ferry to operate, they had to fill in part of those adjacent wetlands for the landing area, the bulkheads, et cetera. The same would be for just private use, boat landings, piers, those kind of things. So the act was a very much of a common sense act in 1899. It was remained the same through 1972. It was just a simple way to work with these different uses without negatively impacting the navigational channel.
Well, is there mitigation involved?
There is, and we'll get to that a little bit later.
Oh, but not okay. In that particular
No, part. No, well, we can discuss the mitigation and the question and answer so we don't get too sidetracked.
All right, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Note here as well that the privately owned uplands starts right at the water's edge. There's the water's edge, and there's the uplands. Now, the big change in 1972 was that when the Refuse Act was merged with the Clean Water Act, the EPA administrator was the administrator of all the Clean Water Act. So this means that the Secretary of the Army now had to work with the EPA administrator, which is currently Gina McCarthy. This is a big deal because from 1972 to 1987, the Corps of Engineers actually fought an expanded definition of what adjacent wetlands were. And the reason they fought is because they knew they were going to get into a big Donnybrook with private property owners when this definition was expanded. But in 1987, the Corps of Engineers surrendered to the EPA and expanded the definition, and quite frankly, we've been in court with the federal government, I say we, private property owners, ever since.
Now, are we looking at whether to give the authority to...
We're going to get to those slides.
Okay, because, I mean, you're just giving us a history on wetlands.
A little bit, but you have to understand how this functions. And this is, there's only two more slides on the 404, this one and one other. But it's important to understand the history and intent, okay? Because without understanding the history and intent, I officiated basketball for 25 years, and I observed for the NCAA for five. And I want to tell you, when you have a basketball official on the floor that knows the rules to the letter but doesn't know the intent, you have disaster. So intent is important. These are in the Act itself, 404, or actually in the Section 404 itself. These are exemptions, normal farming and silviculture, et cetera. One thing that was eliminated in 1987 was land clearing. Land clearing was restricted in adjacent wetlands, the expanded definition of wetlands. And I would challenge anyone, how many people in here, how many of you guys know, how many acres of farmland or development land would exist in Sussex County without land clearing?
Without what?
Without land clearing.
Land clearing.
How many acres?
Very little.
Not one.
Very little.
Not one. This courthouse would not exist if land clearing didn't come in. So I would argue that the EPA right there actually is violating the Clean Water Act because they're saying you can't clear your forest land to farmland, even though it's obviously a normal activity, especially here in Sussex County. The maintenance of drainage ditches is exempt. This is not just for agriculture. This is for roadways, municipalities. Any drainage ditch is exempt from the act, the maintenance of. Construction of roads, forest roads, and farm roads are exempt, but with caveats so that they don't fill in navigable waters. Back in the day, 1899, when this act was created, there wasn't a motorized equipment. So a lot of times people had to actually shore up stream beds so they could ford over rivers to get the land on the other side. They also had to put in pontoon bridges or other things. These were all allowable uses, okay, as long as they didn't impact navigation. So if somebody upstream decided, hey, I want to navigate this or use it for commerce, then any obstructions would have to be removed and they'd have to find another way to allow commerce, draw bridges or things like that. Very common sense. This is in the regulation, not the law. In 1993, prior converted cropland was given an exemption. And this is an important exemption for rural property owners because in order to lose that exemption, three things have to occur. You have to quit farming it for 5 years, the hydrology has to return, and the vegetative characteristics have to return, all three. Not one of the three, not two of the three, but all three. Otherwise, you maintain the exemption. This is something EPA would like to get rid of, and we obviously would like to retain. Now to the WAC, Mr. Cole. These are numbers that you've heard before, so I won't dwell on them. I do want to point out, though, that 320,076 acres using aerial imagery, what Deseret calls aerial imagery, not 320,075, 74, 77. This must be some hot technology, don't you think? And then 4,019, of which you're familiar with, of privately owned. Now, Deseret claimed there was 3,000 acres of wetlands lost over a period of time, and they gave these, or their, all of this is just public information. It's on the WAC website, so it's not my opinion. This was a photo given by Deseret to demonstrate lost wetlands. This is before, and this is after. You see the red line. I'll back it up so you can see it again. See the red line? Before and after. There's only one little problem with this, and that is that this site is the Laurel Food Line Shopping Center in Laurel, Delaware. And when they give you these photos, they don't tell you where they're at. You have to kind of guess, but I recognize that, and I ask, where is that? And they said, Laurel. So I called the town of Laurel, and guess what? Before the final site plan, a wetland determination was made, and there's no wetlands on that site. So perhaps the aerial imagery is maybe not quite what it's cooked up to be. This is another example of that Deseret gave of wetlands lost. You see the red line circumventing there, before and after. Deseret claims there are wetlands lost in here and clearing for this center pivot. There's only one little problem. NRCS has a table on the WAC, okay? And the representative of NRCS says, we did a wetland determination on that field before the land was cleared. There was no wetlands on site. This was another example given of I think they were referring to this as an isolated wetland, but I can't say positively. But anyhow, wetland that was lost. This is before, and this is after. This is Route 273 interchange in Newcastle County. You can see the little yellow right there, it's hard to see. That's where the wetland was okay? Or their claim that it was. Again, the DelDOT representative on the WAC said, wait a minute, hold on, DelDOT does not break the rules. You know, if there was a wetland, it was permitted and mitigated where it wasn't there. Okay, this is an example that Deneret gave that says, you see this green line right here? Mrs. Deaver, please, right here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're saying that this was a wet, isolated wetland that was negatively impacted before and after. You can note that this development actually preserved the wetland and a significant buffer around it. I would maintain, and I think we all see these as we get applications before the commission and council, that the developments actually preserve these because of, I think, Mr. Cole, as you pointed out previously in another meeting, our cluster subdivisions and RPCs actually allow for that, even though it wasn't intended. It just it seems to work that way.
Is that an answer to my question about mitigation?
No, I'll get to your mitigation question in a little bit.
I didn't know why you called.
Don't remind me. Don't let me forget. But this, don't worry about the top bullets because you've seen those. Look at the bottom here. These are isolated wetlands, and Deneret claims, so the 4,019 acres. They average in size a quarter acre in size. What they didn't want to mention is that they've repeatedly said that they think these isolated wetlands need at least a 50-foot buffer, okay? So if I take a quarter-acre size wetland and a 50-foot buffer, we have programming that I used in my office for years. I sold my consulting business to Nathan Hudson, so I stopped by Nathan's office, and I said, throw me up a quarter acre, give me a 50-foot buffer. It's ArcView, two clicks of a button, and you get an exact number, okay? So to do a 50-foot buffer around a one-quarter-acre wetland, you have to have 0.62 acres of buffers, okay? So it's just a simple math calculation to take a quarter acre wetland times four times that times 4,000, 50-foot buffer, and you get 13,986.12 acres of regulated private property on the 4,000 out of the 4,019 that they're talking about. So what I'm suggesting that it's just a little disingenuous to portray that only 4,000 acres are out there when really they're after at least this, if not more, with buffers included. And I would contend that even if one of those acres was yours, you might feel differently about the subject. Okay, these photos are of isolated wetlands that they say are at risk, Deneret. This is, again, a Deneret photo. You can see these isolated dark spots here, okay? And you see the light colors in between? Those light colors in between are there because this is a working landscape. This is a forest that has been harvested, okay? It's been harvested under the permitting process that we have in forestry. I'm a certified tree farmer. I have a certified tree farm. So we have to get a permit to harvest the trees. And in the permit, we have BMPs. So these dark areas, you can see, were not harvested. These isolated wetlands were actually protected by the working landscape of forestry. Hardly at risk. In addition, Mrs. Deaver, why don't I answer your question right now so I don't forget it. If a developer decided to go in here, this property owner died, and the grandchildren said, hey, I'm going to cash in my chips, right? Well, these are all protected under our land use rules. I mean, before it goes by the time it goes through PLUS, the Deneret Conservation Stormwater, and our own processes, there will be a wetland determination. And the developer would just carve them out, use them as amenities like we have seen before, and they would be protected that way. If a farmer decided to clear land, we actually have in agriculture a greater restriction than developers. Let's take this small area right in here and say that's 1/10 of an acre. Under development, under the Corps of Engineers, the de minimis impact is 1/10 of an acre. So if it's 1/10 of an acre or less, they can take it out. No permit, okay? They can do that, but not in agriculture. In agriculture, we have an additional law called Sodbuster Swampbuster. It's a farm bill thing, okay? We are not allowed any de minimis. We would not be able to clear that land. This is an example. Deneret said that this pond was at risk. But as we've seen, if somebody decide to harvest the forest around or development, nobody's going to go into that pond for either reason. So it is hardly at risk.
Marty,
yes.
You just referenced that the ag community, the developer could fill it, the ag community can't.
Right.
Is that a state ordinance? Or
no,
state
it's federal.
Or
it's
federal?
It's USDA. In 1985, in the farm bill.
How much we're going to be able to do about this, I mean.
You can't do anything about it. You know, I mean, if you want to participate, in 1985, Sodbuster, Swampbuster was part of the farm bill. It's been renewed ever since, and these are the rules we live by.
I'm just wondering if your concern is if DNREC has the authority to do certain things versus federal. they're protected because of federal regulations. So DNREC will still have to protect things because of federal regulations. They're not, they haven't, the state of Delaware hasn't impacted the agriculture community by saying you can't do something there.
No, not at this point, and we don't want them to have that authority because they're saying they're at risk, and I'm pointing out that they're not. This is the last slide that I have, and again, I put this up there even though it's a little bit redundant, but you see these wetlands are not harvested. It's much clearer than the earlier picture. And you see the combing effect here on this area of photo. You see how it looks combed there? Do you recognize that? The reason that combing effect is there is this farm has actually obviously been replanted in trees. What happens is the men go through with what we call a hoedown. They stick the hoedown into the ground. They wiggle it. They take a pine tree. They stick it in. They step on it, and they move on. And they walk in straight lines. These trees appear to be 3 to 5 years old because you're starting to see the crowns of the loblolly pines come through, and that's what's creating this effect of a combing effect of straight lines. So this is, again, is a working landscape. Now, I wanted to comment a little bit. I noticed the governor sent a letter out. I know we've had Virgil Holmes here before the council. And one thing that is just simply not true, and it's not the governor's fault in his letter because he's just taking information given to him by people in the agencies. But the governor says that any DENREC assumption would prevent the landowners from changing definitions of jurisdictions and, again, prevent any future regulatory overreach. That's simply not true. In fact, it's absolutely untrue. And the reason is because EPA and the Corps of Engineers do not have the choice of stepping aside. They are mandated by Congress to regulate these lands. They do have a caveat in Section 404 to grant assumptions to states. But even with that caveat, they do not step aside. And there's only two states in the nation that have assumed Section 404. That's New Jersey and Michigan. In Michigan, they've had situations where EPA has stepped in and overfiled. I have a synopsis of one in my hand. I'm going to pass this out to Mr. Lawson. There's plenty of copies for everyone here, and there's a few extra if some members of the public would like to have a copy. This particular application was for a county road to connect two economic development centers in the state of Michigan. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality approved those permits for that road to be built. EPA, every time this happens, a form gets sent to the EPA to say, here's the action that the state took under the assumption. The EPA got that form. They overfiled. Basically, in layman's terms, they revoked the permit. And as you'll see in the bottom bullet, in January 3rd of 2013, the state of Michigan said this is just not worth the cost and time, and they abandoned the project. The point is that the EPA can change the rules anytime they want. The Corps of Engineers can change the rules anytime they want. The Congress can change the rules anytime they want. And EPA can come in and overfile, even though DENREC has the authority under 404, and stop any project they choose. So for anybody to stand there and say that this is going to stop that process is just patently false, and I have factually documented that with this piece of paper. Now, the five items before you for your consideration that Hal mentioned, two of them you've already voted on, I believe, if I've listened in correctly from my office. That was Motion 1 and Motion 2. Motion 3 was basically to Motion 1, but encapsulating all the wetlands, not just the isolated. The Delaware Farm Bureau is opposed to that for the reasons that we've just given. The other two motions have to do with incentives. And the reason for this flurry of activity is we have an interim report to give May the 1st from the committee to the General Assembly. That's by law. We also have a final report that's due December of this year, 2014. Now, the two incentives that are in the motion, one has to do with the forest land preservation, which the Farm Bureau certainly supports, but we have questions about making it a recommendation. Basically, that motion says that the committee recommends funding be given, a dedicated funding source be given to forest land preservation. Well, no kidding. Ever since forest land preservation was passed, which I testified in favor of on the Senate floor, we've been looking for a dedicated funding source. So to make a recommendation to just simply echo that concept of having a dedicated funding source is like serving a half-cooked meal. What is the funding source? Where is it going to come from? Is it going to come from current funding within the state, or is it going to come from a new tax, and how is it going to be managed? So I think that it's good to have that in the interim report, but certainly it's not mature enough or vetted enough to call it a recommendation. The fifth motion is about the presentation that Brenna Goggin did at the last meeting of the council, which I thought she did a very good job of presenting that concept. And it's of great interest. However, again, the CARE committee, which I serve on, does not have any specific language to change the code. We have not done any kind of scenario analysis on spreadsheets to see if our changes would actually be effective. And we have not done a budget analysis to see what impact it would have on the state general fund budget, which, as you know, is a sensitive issue not only this year, but I'm sure next year as well. So, again, I think it's a great idea to have in the interim report as a matter of discussion, but I don't think we should do that as a recommendation, and I would ask council to support that. I'm going to suggest language changes tomorrow at our WAC meeting. There are two other issues, and then I'm finished, on the CARE committee that have not been mentioned. One is that there's been discussion among the committee members that the funds being used in Ag Land Preservation and the Open Space Council, that the selection criteria might be adjusted to reflect the desire to save these valuable resources so that they would be more heavily weighted in the selection criteria process. We have not had a time to talk to the Ag Land Preservation Foundation or the Open Space Council to see if they would agree or disagree with that concept, or how they might suggest that be framed so that the selection criteria might be adjusted to spend the money we do have in a more efficient manner. And then the last item is on the CARE committee itself. I asked the co-chairman Parkowski when he formed the CARE committee to have a co-chair of NRCS. And the reason is, and Mike granted that, so we have Andy Manis as a co-chair and NRCS, Jamie Arthur, as the co-chair of the CARE committee. And there was a reason for that. There are programs within USDA and NRCS that are already funded from federal dollars to do different conservation practices. It makes sense for us to use state or local monies to leverage with those federal programs so that we can get more bang for our buck and entice more people into those programs. We have not had an opportunity yet to really pull the onion layers back on that idea or conversation, and I think it should be in the interim report, both of those last two items, and they're not mentioned. And again, tomorrow, I'm going to try to bring them up and see if we can't get those included in the interim report. With that, I've kind of rushed through a lot of information. I'm certainly willing to take any questions or comments. Thank you.
Questions from council?
Question.
Mr. Phillips.
You're saying that there is no advantage to giving DENREC this authority because EPA and the Corps retain the right to establish laws that DENREC cannot override.
There's not only no advantage, it's actually a disadvantage, because as we see, the Corps, the federal, do not require buffers on these things, and they have a less expanded definition. DENREC would have to have a definition that is at least equal to or greater than the current federal definition. As we've shown with their aerial imagery, they've already incorporated that into their planning process. So it is our opinion that we would be much worse off with a state assumption because of their expanded definition and regulations like buffers.
If you're a lover of property rights, if you're an environmental extremist, you would like DENREC to come in and create regulations that are far more restrictive than the EPA or the Corps, correct? So, I mean, it really comes down to which ideological position you're taking.
It is a bit of an ideological question, but it has to do with, you know, do you own your property or don't you? Mm-hmm. I had a bit of a conversation with Secretary O'Meara after our last meeting. It was quite animated. And I told him that you're taking our land. And he said, no, you're not. And we went back and forth for a little bit. And then 2 weeks ago, I was asked to give a presentation on behalf of Delaware Farm Bureau to the legislative luncheon that they have every year. If you have 2 or 3 minutes, I could actually
probably not
go through that.
No.
You have 3 $1 bills, George? No, I can prove. I think Mr. Moore would be interested in this because I can actually prove that Colin O'Meara is right and I am right simultaneously. Now, you would think that's impossible, wouldn't you, Mr. Moore? How can I prove that he's right and it's not a taking, and I'm right that it is? Doesn't that interest you?
Yeah.
Anybody have $3 $1 bills?
No. Call me.
Y'all
later.
Are broke. The Republicans?
No, meet me in the hallway. We'll look at it. We'll do that trick in the hallway.
No, I'm interested.
$3 $1 bills.
Three-card Molly.
I am the government. I am here to help. I am not going to steal your money.
Just give me one.
Same habit.
You got a load? I
I know Mr. Phillips, you have a 5 and a 10.
I got a
1. Borrow $2 from.
This doesn't look good, money changing hands.
I'm not stealing this money. This money is the gentleman's up here's money. Okay, I did not take this money from them. What I am doing, this is 1 acre of wetland. I am protecting this from Mr. Phillips and Mr. Wilson, okay, because I don't want them to spend this unwisely. This is a 1 acre wetland. It's precious, right? Mm-hmm. But I haven't taken it from them, and the reason I haven't is because I've established a permitting process by which they can ask me permission to use this land. So I haven't taken it. They can still use it by going through this process. Now, I have the right as the government to actually say to you, no, I deny your request. And even if I deny your request to use, I still haven't taken this land because you can always come back and ask for a different use, okay? Now, I'm a benevolent little government person here, so I'm not going to deny your request to use this $1, okay, use this wetland. But I am going to put conditions on it, okay? Now, you can't spend this dollar on junk food or booze or movies, okay? Heart-healthy food, okay, soy foods. Since I served on the United Soybean Board Executive Committee, I'm going to promote heart-healthy foods, right, soy foods, right? And also, since I'm going to let you use this $1, I've given you permission to use it, guess what happened? This dollar lost my protection, and I've got to mitigate that loss.
Give me $2. There you go. $2. I'll give you $1. You get to use
this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sound like you're coming
in. Yeah. Okay.
The $2 that I just put in my pocket is still yours. Okay? Now, you can't touch it. I'm protecting it from you again. Okay? But it's still yours. If some bad person comes in there and dumps a 50-gallon drum of PCBs on that land, guess whose responsibility is to clean it up? If you can't catch the bad guy, it's yours. If somebody walks on your property and hurts themselves and sues you, you have to defend yourself. And if a judgment is rendered against you, you'll have to pay that judgment. If, for God forbid, somebody should say, well, let's raise a clean water tax or something like that and want to tax that property that I'm protecting from you, you would be liable for that tax. God forbid that would ever happen. Okay? So what I'm saying is that legally, the courts have said that I, the government, have not taken anything from these gentlemen. But I bet you if they put a $100,000 bill down and another $200,000 bill, they'd be chasing after me wanting that money very badly. Because in a practical effect, I have damaged them a great deal. So here, Mr. Moore, is what I've done. Legally, I've proven Colin O'Mara is right. But I think as a human being and an American citizen, I've also proved how wrong it is. Very other good. Questions?
So
your dollar menu with this?
No, I'm going to do this money back because I don't want the parents that I've been brought.
Well, I think you're still talking about wetlands because it was very detailed, and you certainly do know a lot about this. I appreciate that.
I'm the state expert.
I'm trying to keep it simple and help me understand. We're still talking about wetlands, and your overall position is that these wetlands are usable and that they're valuable. And if the state protects them with a regulation, that the state is robbing you. That's what it sounds like to me. Do I understand?
It's private property, yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah. It's no different than them saying you need 3 cars to use 1. Mr. Cole.
The Army Corps of Engineers, the question is, do we let the decisions be made like they are now in Philadelphia or in Dover? And I always thought that, you know, it's nicer to have the decisions made closer to home. And that I could get to, you know, individuals if I had a problem with Department of Natural Resources. All right, let's say we leave the decision making. Question number one: do we want a DNREC to have the authority? We say no. Still in Philly. Can Dover still be more restrictive? Yes, they can. They can up at the legislature in Dover. Those guys can get together and be more restrictive. So whether the authority is in Dover or the authority is in Philadelphia, the state DNREC can be more restrictive. Right now you say there's no buffer required at the federal level, but you say, oh, if the state takes it, DNREC takes it all of a sudden, we're going to have buffers. No, not necessarily. Only if the legislature or they decide to do it. But they could do that today. Isn't that correct, Mr. Moore? Can't we have a bill tomorrow that we'd have buffers around?
They can have a bill. Yes.
They can have a bill. So what you I just heard a bunch of stuff, but nothing really changes.
No,
so
no.
My question is to you, if this consensus is not to go to send our constituents to Philadelphia to argue about their wetlands if they have problems, or do we want them to argue it in Dover? And I if the regulations aren't going to change, and if the DNREC is not adding anything to it, why wouldn't it be better closer to home? If the consensus is still in Philadelphia. That's fine, but I don't need a whole, you know, the federal government does all that. Everything you've told us, we can't change.
Yes, we can.
How?
Well, it's already.
Oh, no, wait, I don't want to go into it. Never mind. No, we don't want to go into it. No, we're talking about do we want.
You asked the question.
I know. I'm retracting that question. Hold everything. I just want to get back to number one. Does the, you know, council want.
Well, one is you've got elected officials meeting in an open session in a body that can debate the issues and people can lobby their local elected officials before a vote is taken. The other is nameless bureaucrats in Dover making the regulations. Now, you're talking about bringing that authority back to...
I need duct tape.
DENREC. That's the difference. I much prefer, in your scenario, you're suggesting that the General Assembly can make laws that would do what we fear.
Yes.
Absolutely true.
And that's true.
But it's open.
Let Mr. Phillips talk.
Yes, I know.
Elected officials have to be accountable to the people.
At Dover.
Correct.
Right.
Versus giving the authority to DENREC. Am I right, Mr. Ross?
No,
Did I hear him wrong?
Never mind.
I'm asking Mr. Ross.
This is really...
Let me ask a question. We're going to move along here.
This is really the issue is that...
DENREC was on stage for an hour and a half last week.
I'm moving along. Mr. Ross, please answer the question, please.
Yes. Well, what Mr. Phillips is pointing out, and to Mr. Cole's point, it's the elected officials like yourselves or the General Assembly represent the people. The judicial branch arbitrates, and the executive branch implements the directions of the General Assembly. What we ask you as elected officials is to protect us from egregious oversight laws like this one that the state wants. And we are have been actively since 1987, as I stated, been pursuing trying to right the ship at the federal level. It takes a long time when you're fighting a big bureaucracy to get through different court systems. We have recently had successes, and we're going to have more. If we adopt a state law, even if we win at the national level, and Mr. Cole, this is pertinent to your issue, can this be changed? It can be changed, and it has been changed, using the judicial system to say lands aren't water, that these aren't adjacent lands, and the court has ruled in our favor. If we continue to win in the courts, as long as much money as it takes to get through the court system to correct this ship, and we establish a state law, then I, as a state property owner, have lost that win because I will be required to adhere to the state law regardless of what happens at the national level. So I implore you to not throw property owners under the bus just simply because one egregious rule and you're going to copy it with another one. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wilson.
I haven't made any comments, but this is exactly what I said last week. You got two regulators. And there's the problem. We got enough to answer to one. And here's what the U.S. Senator, United States Senator, David Viter said from Los Angeles, or Louisiana. He called a proposal one of the most significant land grabs in United States history and would give the environmental groups a new way to attack private property owners. And that's exactly what it is. It's taking the private property owners on. And we'll find out we have less and less and less to say about our own property.
That's at the federal
level. Mr. President, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Godwin, please come back up.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's just go to these questions, please.
Now, unless there's incorrect here, I think number one, number two, we've already taken a position on. Is that correct?
Well, you did mm-hmm. some weeks ago. Yes, yeah. You said that well, those would be no.
That's correct.
Where would be? The opportunity for a minority voice in this, because I agree with Mr. Cole.
You certainly can.
No, I'm fine with the no. I'm fine to go with the majority.
I just said
my opinion is I'd rather see it in Dover as long as the rules don't change. If they're taking regulations from Philly and putting them in Dover and everybody's following them, I can easily deal with it in Dover. And Dover can make additional be more restrictive. Sussex County can be more restrictive, but there seems to be no intent out there to be more restrictive. So anyway, but I'm fine with a no on the first two. That pretty much negates the whole thing. Why don't we just say no to it all?
If we have a consensus of three, we've had that.
Okay.
The third question
certainly you, if someone asks you, please make Mrs. Deaver's position known too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
She's not in favor of that. Okay, go ahead.
Right, thank you very much.
Sure. Question number three is, does the committee recommend that DENREC be given the authority to adopt a freshwater wetlands program to protect all federally regulated wetlands which are subject to federal nationwide permit authority, assuming the federal nationwide permit authority is delegated to DENREC?
One was no, and this is no. I mean, it's automatic.
It's automatic. So,
yeah, I mean, it just, that's to say, that negates.
I think.
Okay with that.
I would like you to.
Opinion.
I would like to make it clear.
Mrs. Deaver,
I would like to make it clear. I represent farmers as well, but I also have other people in my district. I'm not strictly representing farmers, and I don't agree with that question either. I would like my name to be used, and as a matter of fact, that I don't go along with the no.
Okay.
No.
Question number four is, does the committee recommend that a consistent source of funding be provided for the purchase of forest land preservation easements in the forest land preservation program established under subchapter 5 of chapter 9 of title 3 in the Delaware Code?
I like it. I'll just.
It's a question.
I'm going to say no, because it's like farmland preservation. I don't know. If somebody's growing trees to sell, I mean, what are we paying them for? Not to cut them?
I don't think you can answer that question until you tell us where the money's coming from. The state's broke, isn't it?
There is no money.
I agree. This is a very difficult question to digest. As Mr. Ross mentioned, it's simply us making an opinion of whether or not a state program should be funded or not without having any idea where it's coming from.
No, I don't know. Just
so it's kind of a moot question, I would think.
Yep.
I think it seems to be the consensus that until they find out where the money's going to come from, and they want to bring that back to us, we'll talk about it again sometime.
So that's a no.
Now, but it's likely taxpayer money.
With respect to the farmland preservation program, it says in state code $20 million out of real estate transfer tax should be set aside, 10 for open space, 10 for farmland preservation. If they do that, that may be a funding source appropriate for the forest protection.
Councilman Phillips, that point was made several meetings back at the Wetland Advisory Committee by one of our state legislators.
But yet the governor proposes a budget that only puts $2 million into those programs. Now, why the governor won't follow state law that's black and white, maybe ask that question, too. Okay.
So on this question,
like
we're no?
Yeah. I'd like to say something.
Mrs. Deaver.
The way most of our land is zoned AR1 is a gift in itself. That's it.
Thank you. Next
question number five is, does the committee recommend that the availability of the limits of tax credits provided under the Delaware Land and Historic Resources Protection Act of 1999 be amended and expanded to create greater incentives to private landowners to protect and preserve freshwater wetland and adjacent natural resource areas?
Tax credits?
Yeah.
If that's the issue, anytime I think we can allow
I think that's reflective of the presentation we saw last week from
that'd be a great program, I guess.
But I have to again
doesn't bother me.
If tax credits are going to take $2 million out of the pie, and they're going to have to raise the gas tax to make up for it, what have we done really?
Let's just say no to all five.
That sounds good to me.
Just no to number one, and it covers everything. Because we just don't want it in Dover. There we go.
Here, yeah.
Mr. President.
Because we already do incentives here. We do everything in our land use plan, and there we go.
Mr. President.
We should do.
Wilson.
Can I make a motion? We say no to all five?
Sure you can.
Second.
We have a motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mr. Phillips. The answer is no to all five Wetland Advisory Committee questions. Questions on the motion, Mr. Cole.
Yes.
The caveat here is that you basically, the response, just instead of saying no, we would rather see it stay the way it currently is administered.
Okay.
So,
that's right.
Right? So the current,
correct.
The current method of administering and protecting wetlands in the state of Delaware
to remain the same.
We're supporting. We'll remain the same in Philadelphia. We don't see a need. We don't see a need for a change.
Correct.
And as the second, I will accept that change.
Okay, that's what, just a clarification. That's all I'm trying to.
I put my position forward when on the vote, or do you want?
On the vote.
Okay.
Any more questions on the motion? Sorry. We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
I'm going to go. I think that we should consider all of these. The reason is, we're simply making recommendations as a county council to a committee that is only advising what they think is right, and they can't pass law. We're not talking about them passing law either. And as I said before, I represent farms, yes, and other interests, and I wouldn't want to shut the door on these opportunities to protect valuable wetlands. I think the crux of the issue to me is, are they otherwise usable? And so I'm open to all these questions. So no to Mr.
Cole. So your vote's a no, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Cole?
I'll vote to reject these five questions because currently the federal government under the Army Corps of Engineers protects wetlands in the state of Delaware. And from the facts and statistics we were privy to, it appears that they've done a pretty good job. So there are already rules and regulations, and they're administered at the federal level, and that's out of the Philadelphia region. So I'll just support the current method of protection of wetlands, because wetlands are important. They need to be protected, and there's laws that do that at the federal level, and they should remain there.
Mr. Phillips.
In 2009, when this new council took office, we had a report saying we were 16% over our budget. In fact, we had to cut our spending significantly. As a result, this government now enjoys some modest surpluses, and we can afford to do things. The state, until they take that same approach, should not engage in any additional spending initiatives such as these that have been mentioned. I agree with Mr. Cole. Things are working now. There's no need to change. I vote yes.
Mr. Phillips, I'm missing Mr. Wilson.
That's okay. You can comment that too. I certainly agree, and I vote yes, and I certainly say dittos to Mr. Cole. It's already in place. Why do we want one government as our regulator, another government our regulator? And the old saying, two heads is worse than one, in a sense. And when it comes to regulations, really. My answer is certainly yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
So we are a no vote on all five questions.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I would like to thank the Delaware Bay Beach work group report, sir.
Yes, sir.
And I'd like to thank my friends on the other end of the table for supporting my efforts and defeating this bill.
There you go.
But you had a council person who is a yes.
Yes, ma'am.
That was so
good. I just have a report to pass on to you. I don't have a presentation about the Delaware Bay Beach work group. We have met for over 4 years, and the purpose of this group was to examine issues such as beach erosion, marsh drainage, and other issues related to the Delaware Bay Beach communities. This report that we have is pretty conclusive, I believe. It's a very good cost-benefit analysis. As you read through all the pages, and it may take you some time, I think you'll learn how this committee conducted their analysis by first analyzing which conditions needed attention more, and they kind of prioritized the worst damages. They then went community by community and tried to calculate the cost / benefit to the community. There's some very good figures in here. The work of this committee is complete now, and you can take a look at what they have found and some of their analyses. They're not making any recommendations. This committee's work will now be passed on to another committee, I'm told, that will probably make recommendations based on priority and funding. Again, there hasn't been any funding identified to move these projects forward. Some of the work that is needed is already in the budget and scheduled to be done this year and some next. Of all the Bay Beaches, I'll take you quickly through the end of this report. Of all the Bay Beaches, the cost benefit appeared to be mainly just to the property owner. There was no real benefit to people other than those who owned those properties along the bay, it, with the exception of Broadkill Beach. The Broadkill Beach area, they, in their analysis, did seem to have some what I call overspill benefit. There's some benefit to the greater community for tax dollars being spent to make some preservation. And that came as they weighed the cost of the improvements versus how much time and benefit would be achieved. So if you have questions on this that you'd like more information, I have a notebook about yay thick. I can let you take a look at it or go through or whatever you want to do. But I thought that this study, while it took some time, was done pretty well. And it really comes down to a cost-benefit analysis at the end that lets everyone see, the community and the individual property owners on those beaches, exactly where they stand.
Thank you, sir.
What's the short answer?
There's no money.
But if we had the money, would it be justified? Are they saying it's justified?
They're saying it's only justified in Broadkill Beach.
In one beach.
Right. The other beaches, it would simply be tax dollars fixing private properties.
I understand. Well, that's good to know. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Godwin.
Not much air to
protect. Mr. Jennings, grant request.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first grant is the New Zion United Methodist Church. They're requesting support for their annual basketball tournament and Community Awareness Day. The event educates the community on health issues such as HIV, drugs, and diabetes. There is no specific amount requested. Last grant received was $300, which was $150 from Mr. Vincent, $150 from Mr. Phillips.
I'll make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Phillips, second. Mr. Cole, the grant $300, $150 from Mr. Phillips, $150 from myself. Our council might grant categories for the New Zion United Methodist Church for a youth outreach team's annual basketball tournament and Community Awareness Day. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
We have the motion carried. Next.
Lower Sussex Little League's requesting $2,500 for their Little League program. The money raised will pay for uniforms, dirt, lime, electric, and repairs to the complex. Last grant received was $2,500, which was $1,250 from Mr. Cole and $1,250 from Mr. Phillips.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mr. Phillips, to grant $2,500 to Little League Baseball Lower Sussex for program expenses, being $1,250 from each of those two people, their categories. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
But yes, motion carried. Proposed zoning ordinance, Mr. Moore.
There are none, Mr. President.
This will be brought forward to council, Mr. Guy.